Happy to have the opportunity, thanks to Jack, to present you a second person method that I've been using and trying to improve since I began my PhD thesis with Francisco Varela. It was 15 years ago. The goal of this method is to enable an interviewed person to become aware of a given lived experience and to describe it with precision. The resulting description is thus a first-person description, a description expressing the viewpoint of the person itself, in the grammatical form I. But as this description is collected through the help of another person, a you, it has been called a second-person method. For example, by Francisco, in the introductory article of the view from within. Some aspects of these methods are new, but most of them are inspired by other methods, of which I would like to give you an overview. The main one is the explicitation interview, designed by Pierre Vermersch, a French researcher. This method, explicitation method, is itself inspired by Husserlian psychophenomenology, by the Piaget's theory of becoming aware, and by theories of concrete memory of Ribot and Gusdorf, who are French psychologists. My other sources, I would like to add that Vermersch and his students have used this method for 20 years, mainly for pedagogical context. This method is taught to the French young teachers, school teachers for the children.
So how do they use it? They use it with the children?
Yes, with the children, in order to help the children to explicitate their difficulties, for example, in learning to write or to read, and to help them to resolve them. The second one is the focusing method, created by Jandin, you know him, which is especially well suited for enabling the interviewed person to come in contact with the bodily dimension or felt meaning of his experience and describing it. The third one is the modeling interview, a method coming from NLP, the Neuro-Linguistic Programming, which helps the interviewed person to discover the internal cognitive processes or strategies he uses in order to improve them. And a great source of inspiration for me are shamatha and vipassana. As far as shamatha's goal is to enable us to stabilize our attention or our lived experience, and vipassana to find out the dynamic structure of our experience. But these techniques, these two meditation techniques, are not intended to produce verbal descriptions of experience. This requires a very special kind of expertise, or the help of an expert interviewer. This is why this meditation techniques and the interview techniques I use are very complementary. So, my presentation will be divided into three sessions of 2 hours, the first one, and then 3 hours. Each session will be focused on one particular difficulty of the description of lived experience and the interview techniques aiming to overcome this difficulty, this particular difficulty. Each session will be divided into three parts. First, a presentation and possibly small demonstrations and exercises related to the particular aspect to be explored in the session. Then, group interviews. You will be divided into groups of two or three persons and will interview each other. Each person playing in turn the role of interviewee, and observer. So the groups will work in parallel. And third, we'll have a feedback and discussion about these exercises involving all of us. The first session will be focused on, today we'll focus on the what we call the satellite dimensions of experience. An untrained person very often shifts from the description of the experience itself toward the verbalization of comments, beliefs, judgments, explanations, or theoretical knowledge about the experience. These dimensions are related to the experience and easier to describe, but are not the experience itself. We call them the satellite dimensions of experience. The role of the interviewer consists of identifying the dimension in which the subject is situated at a given moment and to help him refocus on the experience itself. It is this aspect that we are going to investigate this evening. The second one is usually our attention is completely absorbed in the content, in the what of our experience. We are not reflexively conscious of the how of our experience. I'll come back on these notions later. The interviewer's task then is to help the subject to refocus his attention from the what toward the how, from the content of the experience towards its structure. This structure has itself several dimensions, a temporal or diachronic one, as well as a synchronic dimension. This refocusing of attention is triggered by the very particular type of content-empty questions the interviewer asks. These questions are not concerned with the content of the experience, but with its structure. So we'll explore this aspect of the interview technique in the second session, in fact, tomorrow morning. Third, in order for a person to be able to describe his experience and not what he believes he is doing, or what he imagines he is experiencing, he has to enter in close contact with this experience. The first condition for such a description is for it to be about a singular experience. But there is an additional difficulty. Most of the time, there is a temporal gap between the experience and its description. Between the time of experiencing and the time of describing. In order for the person to come into contact with his or her experience, he has thus to recall it or to evoke it. And it is this particular aspect of the interview technique that we'll explore in the third session. I hope I'm understandable.
Yeah, okay.
But before beginning the first the and enter into the satellite dimensions of experience, I would like to add something more general. In fact, for me, the objective of these sessions are not only to present this interview method, but to try to begin to acquire a shared vocabulary about lived experience. A vocabulary which would not be an abstract one coming from theoretical knowledge about experience, cognition and consciousness, but a vocabulary which is grounded in experience, in a common lived experience, in fact in the experiences that we are going to live here. So we are going to work at different levels for beginning to acquire this common vocabulary. We are going to first to live some experience. It's experience one. For example, imagining something or any experience. Secondly, we are going to describe this experience through the interviews. And third, we are going to try to identify experiential categories from these descriptions, these many descriptions. For example, a mental image is an abstract category. But we'll have to do this threefold work at two different levels. The level of experience, but also the level of the particular experience consisting in describing one's experience. Because describing one's experience is also an experience. So we are going to make this particular kind of experience too, and we are going to describe this particular experience and to identify some categories about of the description of an experience. So we are going to try to acquire a shared vocabulary on these two levels. How do we experience? And how do we describe our experience? The structure of experience and the structures of the particular gesture enabling us to become conscious and to describe our experience. It's okay?
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question at this point?
Yes, okay.
Okay. How crucial is it to understand at this point in your presentation the distinction between the left and the right side in the image there? I haven't quite grasped that distinction yet, and if it's important to grasp it for what's to come, maybe you could just clarify it again a little bit more, but if you think it's going to become clear in the exercises, then...
Yes, in fact, I could clarify, but I prefer that as I have just said, that we discuss on the ground of the experiences we are going to live.
Okay.
In fact, I hesitated to show this one because it's a little maybe premature.
Premature.
But
Merci.
You described the
the describing of the experience as an experience.
Yeah.
Rather than something that is itself experienced.
So, yes, it is an experience.
As une expérience, yeah? Rather than quelque chose qui est expérimenté.
I don't understand.
The describing is surely an action.
But it's also
experienced.
But is it a big deal? She just said the experience of describing an elephant. And the experience of describing the experience of imagining an elephant. Is that does that mean?
Well, I just wondered if it was crucial.
I don't understand your point.
It doesn't sound like it's crucial.
Est-ce que la description de l'expérience est elle-même une expérience, ou est-ce qu'il y a une expérience de la description de l'expérience?
Qui est
question. Est-ce que la description de l'expérience est déjà en soi une expérience?
Oui.
Ou est-ce qu'on peut dire qu'il y a d'un côté la description de l'expérience, et de l'autre côté, l'expérience d'avoir décrit ou de décrire l'expérience?
Je ne comprends pas.
I don't think it sounds to me like in law we used to call a distinction without a difference.
Well, in Steve's defense, if it were possible, you know, like it's possible for us to drive the car without experiencing driving the car, right? Sometimes, at least in theory, if it were possible to describe the experience of imagining an elephant without actually experiencing describing the experience, then I suppose it would be. It is a real distinction, but it's one that won't come up in practice anymore.
Okay. We'll buy that.
Sorry. I hope I understand better.
There is something you said at the very end. The last thing you said was, and this will enable us to describe our experience and therefore become conscious. Did you say that or did I mishear you?
No, she said, and therefore, I'll let her speak.
No.
I misheard.
Just the experience of. The experience of describing and the experience of becoming conscious and describing. It's this one. Of becoming conscious and
that's
describing.
That's why I wanted to know.
Yes.
Of becoming conscious.
Yeah. Because I'll come back to this one tomorrow morning. Okay. Longer.
Right, I'll put it aside for now.
Because most of that we discovered with this method is that most of our experience is not reflexively conscious.
That's what I thought. Okay, so you do think there's experience, and that can be prior to or present without consciousness in the sense of reflexive consciousness.
Yes. Okay. But we'll come back to that tomorrow. So, we come to the satellite dimensions of experience. So it is quite well known that when an untrained person, I think Russ will be okay with that. When a person, an untrained person, describes his or her experience spontaneously, the description she produces is rather poor. Because generally, he or she shifts quickly from the description of actual experience, from what he or she, she shifts from what she effectively lives at that moment, toward the verbalization of dimensions which are related to this experience, but are not the experience itself. Pierre Vermerch has begun to build the following cartography of the different domains of verbalization which are connected to or satellites of the description of the experience. The first satellite domain is the context of the experience. The second one consists of the judgments, commentaries, assessments about the experience. The third one is the domain of theoretical knowledge and explanations. And the fourth one is the domain of goals and objectives. So, I forget to tell you something about this test, this session. In fact, there will be a beep. We will serve as the experience that we are going to. No, it is not.
The experience we're going to experience.
What? Ignore it. So we are going to do exactly the same thing as it was the case for Russ's beeps. Yes, but in fact, there are some people who are not there. So I explain just the idea. There is a sound. It will not be the same sound as Russ's sound. It's another sound. It will be Tibetan bowl. Mm-hmm. And when this sound will occur during my presentation, you'll have to describe what was your experience just before this sound. And note on a paper. Have you a paper? Note.
I don't have anything.
We can change that.
We'll
do it when the bell.
When the bell will ring.
You're gonna do that in the next few minutes.
Yes.
Okay. So you'll have a minute for just describing what was happening for you just before the bell rang, just before.
So what you write down will just be a kind of a reminder to yourself of what was happening immediately before the sound.
Okay, so I come back to the satellite dimension, the first one, which is the context of the experience. And I give some concrete examples, which are examples of beat experience, because we have this shared experience. So let's imagine that I'm wearing the beat machine as I wore it last year at here. And at the very moment when the beep rings, I am taking a photograph by the pond of Ratnalin, just by there. I could then describe the spatial and temporal context. For example, when the beep rang, I was walking near the pond. It was after lunch. It was about 2 p.m. The sun had just come out, whereas it had been raining the whole morning. As the grass was still damp, I had put my boots so to be able to walk better. All this gives little information about what my experience actually was, what really happened for me at the moment of the beep. However, we'll see in the third session that it's very useful for the interviewer to ask questions on the context, because these questions enable the subject to evoke the moment where the beep rang, to recall this moment, in order to enter in contact with the experience he had at this moment. So it is very useful for the interviewer to help the interviewed person to describe the context. But description of the context gives little information about the experience itself. Okay.
So when we write down things, when we hear the bell, should we write down things like the context, or should we just focus on what was going on inside? The context is, we all know the context, right? So we don't need to write it down.
No? You have, in fact, when a big problem, you have to describe what was your experience.
Okay. Inner experience, not the context.
Okay. Your experience. It was, maybe it was...
Okay.
We have begun.
So, for example, when you did this, the beak went and you were walking by the pond, you wrote down the description of the context at that moment. You didn't write down what your experience was.
No, I suppose that when the beep rang, in fact, after that I have an interview with Russ, for example, and I say that when the beep and I describe the context of my experience.
Right.
In fact, what I am explaining is if I describe this context, I don't describe what was my experience.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so you're asking us to write the experience, not the context, which was Ron's question.
That's right.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But I assume that usually most of people, when they are not aware of that, where if nobody before they become expert describing their experience, most of them describe the context.
Yeah.
And also the goals, for example. For example, after the beep, when Russ interviewed me, I could say, in fact, I wanted to walk a little after the meal to have a breath of fresh air before the next presentation. Because I am accustomed to walking 1 hour every day, and if I don't do it, I don't feel well. And I wanted to stay alone in silence for a moment. And also I had noticed an old armchair close to the pond, and I wanted to take a photo that I would entitle Armchair Philosophy at Rathmannen. All that doesn't give any precise information about what happened for me at the time of the beep. Of course, the objective has an influence of the unfolding of the experience. For example, my experience will be different if I go to the pond, by the pond, in order to take a photo, or to gather flowers, or to talk with Susan, for example. Let's take another example. The way you listen to this presentation would be different if you have to write a report on it, for example, or if you don't specially try to remember what I said. But the description of your objective doesn't give any precise information about what you really experienced during this presentation.
So I think we'll just go back down. Oops. To here. You should be okay.
Statements of value, judgments, assessments, beliefs or comments about the experience that frequently intersperse the descriptions do not bring any precise information of the experience itself either. For example, if I say, my photo is actually very good. I succeeded in taking a contre-jour shot of a reflection of the sun on the pond. The effect is magic. I still don't give any precise indications concerning the experience itself. on what I did and how on how I proceeded at this precise moment to take the photo. The fourth satellite domain is the one of representations, theoretical knowledge, and explanations. The subject, I'm sorry, but thank you. The subject slides toward the description of what he knows about the experience, toward the representation he makes of it. Just as someone who spontaneously draws a table draws as he knows it is, rectangular. In fact, he must learn to see the table as it really appears to him, that is like a deformed parallelogram. In particular, when the experience being described is associated with the realization of an action, it is frequent for the subject to describe his theoretical or procedural knowledge about the action, the rules that he has learned. For example, I could tell you that in order to take a good photograph, it's necessary to establish the right correlation between the sensitivity of the film, the opening of the objective, and its shutter speed. But this would not give you any precise indication on the way I proceeded to take this photo by the pound. Indeed, as many research studies such as those of Piaget showed, there is an important gap between the representation the subject has of his action, and notably the rules he believes he uses, and the actual unfolding of the action. And the more a person becomes an expert in a given field, the more his know-how becomes personal, embodied, remote from knowledge which can easily be described and transmitted in the form of concepts and rules, which more often characterize a novice. The possible explanations given by the subject about his experience must also be distinguished from the experience itself. For example, I could say, oh well, when the bee prints, I'm remembering another contre-jour photo that I had taken last year at Seaside. Because I belong to the category of visual person, I often make mental images. So in the last part of the sentence, I'm sliding from the description of experience toward abstract consideration, explanation about this experience.
Can you repeat the sentence?
Yes, I'm sorry. It is no...
It's not
No.
It's not there. I see.
It's not. I have not written. When the bee prints, I'm remembering another contre-jour photo that I had taken last year at Seaside. So this is experience. I'm remembering another photo. Okay, it's an experience, but. If I say, because I belong to the category of visual person, I often make mental images, I'm shifting from the description of my experience to an explanation. Mm-hmm. And it's very usual, in fact, in descriptions. So the role of the interviewer consists of identifying at a given time the register in which the subject is situated, and helping him to go from one register to another. For doing that, he has to demonstrate both firmness and delicacy. Firmness because each time the subject slides towards satellite dimensions, in my method, he has to interrupt him. And delicacy because after this interruption, in order to not to break the relationship of confidence, the relationship of trust with the subject, he has to show him that he has nevertheless been listened to. For this purpose, the interviewer first has to carefully reformulate what has just been said. And after that, he can bring back the subject firmly to the description of his experience by questions of the following type.
Yeah.
I have understood.
You look okay.
So, for example, if the subject is lost in the description of the context, he can say that. Thus, if I understand you well, after the meal, about 2 p.m., the sun has just come out and you are by the pond. So he reformulates what has been said. The main of this reformulation here is essentially to make the subject understand that he has been listened to. And when the beep rings, what's happening to you? In order to refocus on the experience itself. When the subject is describing goals, in other words, you wanted to take a breath of fresh air before the next presentation and to be alone for a while. When the beep rings, you're taking a photograph by the pond. What are you doing exactly? It's very simple, in fact, very, very, very simple questions. All the questions of the interview are extremely simple.
When you say you interrupt the person giving the description, do you mean you actually stop them in the middle of a sentence and say no, or you break into what they're saying, or do you wait until they come to a pause and
yes,
then
yes,
you wait?
Yes, okay. It has to be
right.
Delicate.
yeah, you said yes, before no, firm but no. Delicate, and that, yeah, okay, I understand.
But it's difficult to interrupt when the subject is very enthusiastic about the context or something and talks a lot and explains is very convinced of his explanation and
yes.
It's difficult to interrupt him. But you have to, because when you have for example 1 hour or 30 minutes to interview somebody on a subject, a given subject, for research purpose or pedagogic purpose, you cannot you have to focus him on the experience.
Mm-hmm.
more rapidly.
Can I, Russ? Do you mind if I ask you a question? Sort of, because you know, obviously we're making comparisons.
It's okay with me if it's okay with Claire.
Yeah, is it okay with you, Claire, if I ask Russ a question?
Yes, yes.
Because we have these two different.
Sure.
So, do you try to make your interviews usually open-ended as a way of not having to deal with this question? Or I mean, I'm sure there are practical constraints, but
so far, Claire is describing exactly the same kinds of things that I deal with.
Okay.
And my reactions are the same, except I'm probably a little bit more abrupt than Claire is.
Okay.
So I would interrupt somebody.
Okay.
Say I'm not interested in that.
Okay.
Okay. So, when the subject is expressing judgment, it's the same structure. So you took a very nice photo of a reflection of the sun of the water. At the moment you are by the pond taking this photo, what happens exactly? And when the subject has slid toward explanations, so therefore, because you belong to the category of visual persons, you have at that moment an image in your head. Let's look at this image again. Can you describe it to me? So always the same way to refocus. So now I would like to propose you an exercise. about the satellite dimensions. I'm going to give you the... So there are three pages, and if you can turn three pages, each one again. So the idea is we divide into groups of three persons. I hope you are still. I hope you have the courage to lead a little interview. It's not a long one. Tomorrow it will be longer, but now it's just a little interview. A little interview very similar to the interview that Russ made, or who interviewed you mm-hmm. yesterday. Mm-hmm. So the role of the interviewer is to help the interviewed person to describe his experience just before the beep. And there is, in fact, I give you this. How do you use this
diagram?
Hopscotch. Hopscotch. Is it hopscotch? So the interviewer has to be aware of the satellite dimension where the interviewed person is at each moment. So I give to the interviewer a little stone, and he put the stone on the phone, corresponding to the dimension where the interviewed person is at every moment. He has to be very careful and move the phone not where he wants the interviewed person to be, but where the interviewed person is actually. And
the interviewer does that, or the observer does that?
The interviewer. It's difficult. It could be the observer. It could be another way to proceed. But I think it's important that the interviewer learns to observe. I invite you to reformulate regularly what has been said. It's not so easy to reformulate. It's really a skill to learn, because in order to reformulate, you have to listen very precisely to what has been said. And when you think that you have collected information enough, in fact, after 8 minutes, 5 or 8 minutes, you stop, and the idea I invite you to reformulate the whole description, a synthesis of the whole description, while moving the pawn on the different boxes.
So then you want to write anything down in this, or is it just a matter of doing it verbally? You want the observer to actually, the interviewer to record what's relevant, as well as do it. Do you want us to write?
No. It's not.
Writing.
No, it's if you need to write in order to remember what and to reformulate, you can
in
write.
Words, you don't want us to write a description of the
experience. No. But it could be interesting that the observer notes some questions or some. Previously, I just described the role of the observer. The observer has to note the relevance of the reformulations and of the questions. For example, there are some good questions effectively refocus the attention of the interviewed person on the experience. So there are good questions. Bad questions. Bad questions who on the contrary, distance the interviewed person from his experience, and the interviewed person is distracted towards context or goals, and it's easy to distract him. So it would be interesting that the observer notes these questions, because after that you are going to discuss three by three and the whole group, and it will be interesting that we have some concrete examples on which to describe. So if the observer can note everything, everything he can, he remarks. Yes, and the other goal role of the observer is to verify that the pawn is always on the good
the appropriate box
on the appropriate box.
Can you say what an inductive intervention is?
Yes, in fact, usually I make introduction to induction. Induction is when you interpret what has been said. You give yourself as interviewer. You give in interpretations, or you give a judgment.
I see.
A judgment. So.
Okay, so that would be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you have to limit yourself to reformulations,
right,
and some appropriate questions. But a question can be inductive.
Yeah.
Sorry,
can you go over that again? That was a bit fast. About inductive generalization.
If you're adding to what stuff that isn't there.
Yes.
It's a leading question.
Or interpretation.
No,
it's not a leading question, but because the interview is full of leading questions.
That's true.
It's a very leading interview. You really are very directive. But we try not to interpret, to add something.
Right. So inductive would be the interviewer actually operating in one of these satellite boxes.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Can you give an example?
I have not prepared example, and I'm very tired.
The interviewer says something like, "Oh, well, you were using that Pentax camera, and that gives you a lot of problems in that kind of situation."
Going out beyond the
Well, you were doing that because you're a visual person,
Or you must have felt like this in this situation.
Yes.
Many ideas. Very good at that, right? That fits in very well with my theory about how these things work, right? That would be an example.
There's a kind of a fine line between not slipping into those inductive summaries and summarizing what the person said and then coming in with the leading questions. So,
yes.
What was your experience at that moment?
Exactly.
Going them back to the experience.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You want us to summarize with his words. You don't want to paraphrasing.
Yes. Because the interviewed persons are. They are looking for their words. It's difficult to describe one's experience. So when they choose a word, it's very this word. It's not another one, and to change the word is not good at all. And
just a further question: in taking somebody back to the experience. Is it appropriate in this method to be directive to the point of saying something like, and what does that feel like? Or, so you were describing being there, what did you see? Or, I mean, is that too directive?
No.
That's
no,
okay. Did you hear anything?
For the moment, just do as you because we are progressively see what are the good questions to in this matter to pose tomorrow and the day after we'll see about the question. Now just experiment and if you ask a bad question, it's very informative, in fact. And we so the observer can write this question. They are very precious, because we can discuss about that afterwards. I don't want to give more
hints.
Yes, for the moment.
Yeah. So we break up into groups?
Yes, so I've not prepared the group. Maybe you can just choose your group and.
Are you one of us? Or?
No,
okay.
I don't. No. Oui, oui.
We'll come there,
just,
so we won't interrupt.
Jack, just about the time.
Yeah.
Maybe half an hour for the three interviews.
So we all take turns. So
yes.
Each of us is the interviewer, each of us is the interviewee.
Yes. So 10 minutes for one interview and a little discussion,
mm-hmm.
and then you turn.
Mm-hmm.
And and maybe I wanted to take stones for the. The phones. I've not.
You can take coins.
Coins. Yes.
What?
Coins.
remarks, or comments, or questions, or anything you want to share about this exercise?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So we have one question. I'm not sure if I'm going to tell it right, but that was my question already before. What do you do with people that are trained? And they are answering. So, for example, when we did the interview, then I said, well, I know I went into, let's say, judgment or something, you know, when I had this reflection and knowing of what's right, what's good, what's bad, when mm-hmm. and I was the subject. So, you know, that there is additional dimension to that. Jack almost wanted to add the new box there, you know, judging your own reporting.
Meta judgment or something.
Meta judgment, yes.
Yes, it's a good idea, but I think it's fine if you make a judgment, be conscious of making a judgment. It's for me it's fine, it's okay. It's
the interviewer has to correct that, I think. Mm-hmm. No, take the role that he's not supposed to have, actually. Just stick to the experience.
I have a different view on this. I think that there's a reason why people give these satellites sometimes, because it's a way of communicating experience. You know that I think sometimes words don't do very well, so we sometimes try to specify the experience by giving the context or giving the judgment or giving the knowledge or whatever, so that we hope the other person who is similar enough to us will then know what experience we are talking about, because they know how to relate context or knowledge to experience. So I think we use it, it isn't a distraction, it actually is it actually does help specify the experience sometimes. Not all the time. I think sometimes it is a distraction, but
or help misspecify.
Or help misspecify.
But we had a similar, I guess, an argument, similar type of situation where
you mean when describing the context, you think people think that the other one will access to his experience.
Sometimes it's a shorthand for. I'm having the kind of experience you usually have when you taste this particular kind of wine. And if the other person knows that wine, and then I know it, then they go, oh, right, okay. So I give them the context. I'm drinking the glass of this wine. It sounds like it's not about the experience. So it's, oh, that's just context. That's satellite. But if you know what kind of experiences are usually had in that context, then it's a way of talking about the experience.
As long as you don't factor in matching qualia as an issue. That your experience of drinking wine may be radically different from my experience.
Yeah, I think when people do this, they're assuming that people have the same experience when doing this.
Yeah. Well, we have
so it's dangerous.
It is dangerous.
Mm. We had an example as well. So, I had an experience, for example, of drifting and your voice being in the background. But in order to explain, you know, when this was being probed, I said, well, it's a little bit like, you know, if your focused attention is on one thing and the other voices are in the background. So I was adding a little bit of theory that it was only to try and convey, you know, the sense of something being in the foreground and something else being in the background. And I thought my meaning wasn't being clear. So what do you, is that okay or isn't it okay?
And have you, you said you had an example? No?
Well, no, yeah, I, no. It was at the moment of the beep. My mind was drifting, and I wasn't clearly focusing my attention on what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so your voice seemed to be dimmer compared to how it would be if I was focusing.
Mm.
But in order to explain that, I used, a situation that we're all in, because my meaning didn't seem to be immediately clear, because people wanted to know exactly what it was that I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was giving context, even giving theory, but it was only to explain the quality of the experience. Bad, good, indifferent.
But there was also, we said, Tom, side focus. I was in for and I kept it clearly on the drifting bit, just on the drifting. But Tom wanted to know what drifting from what to what. Mm-hmm. And there was a sort of... Tu comprends?
Non, pas très bien.
Non, c'est que moi, j'avais un focus vraiment sur le sensation de drifting, flottant. Mais Tom a demandé, parce qu'il trouvait ça pas assez, il a dit, mais flottant de où à quoi? De quel point? Parce que tu flottais et à quel point? Et moi, je demandais, est-ce que ça c'est une bonne question? Non, est-ce que ça c'est un contexte ou c'est l'expérience?
Peut-être
que
tu peux dire en anglais,
maintenant. Well, I think I said it in English.
Yeah, yeah. Not you say it in English. What was your question?
Right, was it a good question?
Because he wanted to know if Max was going, from what Max was drifting and to what Max was drifting. Was this a good question or was it a context? I felt that.
Depends on how it's phrased. If he said, what were you drifting from and what were you drifting to, maybe that's a little leading. If he says, was there anything you were drifting from? Was there anything you were drifting to? That
well,
might
I
be
was asking thing. Claire, since she's the mistress of this methodology.
Sorry, one. I couldn't be more rude. From. Yes. The question was exactly from where?
From what? From the telephone.
Mm.
I can find as it is not there.
I think it's a little interpretative. It's a little too leading, in fact, yes. Because it's a funny question. Really, I don't know. I have to think about that.
So the thing is that actually it revealed something, namely that there was a thought process going on that was still lingering in the background, and actually quite a lot of attention was on there, and there was the worldly situation around Max coming back into view and into attention. So there was actually, due to the asking of the question, there was this temporal process that was kind of revealed in the experience.
And that raised another question. So human. Ross asked us to focus on precise, to use Russ's term, microsecond, or your term, the instant, before the gong went, that we started having problems with experience actually occurring in an instant, and that we started talking a little bit about the psychological present, which, is in short-term memory or working memory, and that probably has a couple of seconds worth. So, and also the there is a kind of dynamic to the experience. It's coming from somewhere, or feels a little bit maybe that we might even remember what it was coming from, and might even feel a little bit as if it's going somewhere else. And so it seemed more appropriate to take a slice rather than an instant, and actually. Even without using inference, but just to describe more fully what was going on at the time, not at the moment now, but at
the
time.
So you want to go further?
Yeah, a little bit back. And obviously can't do much about the future, because there might be sort of a feeling, but not much. But certainly a bit in the past, yeah. Is that okay?
For me, personally, it's not a problem. I think one of the differences between Russ' method and mine is that with my method, I'm okay to describe, and the method is suited for describing a process. So not only
an instant,
but... The unfolding of experience.
And the problem then is how to distinguish that from the context.
The unfolding from the context?
Yes.
Well, my response to that may be the difference between a description of objects as distinct from a description of one's experience.
Yes, you're right. In fact, the context is you can have an experience without being aware at all of the context. Sometimes the context is important, because you really look at something or hear something, and it's part of your experience. But it may be not, and some elements of the context sometimes really enter your experience.
Actually, in case of Max, that was the case, wasn't it? Yeah. You were thinking of the situation of the workshop or the conference.
Yeah, I just had a drifted thought, and I remember what it was and what made me drift, and so it was important to say that too.
Yes. So you recall the context? Or
well, the thought that led up to
But the thought was about the context of this conference.
Well, the thought related to what you were doing, and how that related to other things
your thought at the moment of the thought about the
context. Just before it. And then I was just so I remember being in transition and realizing as deep went,
but
you're focusing on your
thought. In this case, it's your experience. It's the thought about the context. It's really your experience. In this case, it's relevant to.
But what's important is that the way that it's relevant is not that he was having the thought just before the beep, but the drifting that he was experiencing. Had a character shaped by the thought that you had before.
Exactly. Yes.
So even though the thought wasn't being had now, it still plays a role in specifying the content of the experience now, because it's a particular kind of drifting. It's a drifting from that thought.
Mm-hmm.
And a Husserlian would have no problem with this, right? Because there's a retention, reverberating back through the past is reverberating into the present, and right now you've got this the past, kind of a history of the past experiences present right now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even also some anticipation of what experiences you're going to, for attention you're going to have.
Yes, in this case.
So I have a fairly different, I think, take on the sort of the messiness of the temporality that you're referring to here.
Yeah.
And I think that it is quite likely largely due to the quality of the beat. The beat was not very clear. And so I think it takes a while to figure out, well, was that the beep? Was that the beep? And by the time you had figured out whether that was the beep or not, then these kinds of things are difficult to discern. Hmm.
What would your response be to experiences not actually taking place in an instant of time?
Well,
they have to have a temporal duration.
I think I think all experiences have temporal, or most experiences have temporal duration. Some longer than others.
Sure. Is there any other questions or remarks?
Yeah, we found one of our questions had to do with the even though the question was focusing back on the experience, the more questions that were asked, the farther afield it seemed to go. It seemed to lead toward satellite issues rather than back, even though we kept asking the person to focus. The more probing, the more kind of it sort of ramified out.
Mm-hmm. So you said it was very difficult to focus on the experience. There was always more and more satellite.
Mm-hmm. As she went on. In the beginning, the focus was on the experience, but the more you tried to probe the experience,
mm-hmm.
if I understand correctly what you're saying, that was a joke.
Yes.
Okay, I have a question, Claire. You know, we've all had experience, just about, with the beeps, through Russ's beeps. And so, actually, I appreciate the value of this diagram and grid, but you know, we really were basically all pretty good at sticking with experience. It seemed to me because we understood that was our job, and we already had some training. So, in that sense, it was probably not a typical beginning group. Right?
Yes, I'm happy with that. Yes. But it's not your remark. Your remark, it's for you, for your in
yes,
your group.
Yes.
Difficult to
yes.
to describe yeah. experience. It was, there was a lot of shifts towards satellite. Yeah. It's usually the case with
So that wasn't universal. Right.
We had actually the opposite, which is to say when we first started. Of having these satellites before us then made it very difficult for to start talking. So it seemed as though it was much more guarded, you know, saying like, I better be careful what I say, I'm gonna get off my experience. So I don't wanna talk about the context or the goals or the knowledge or the judgment. And then suddenly it's like, you know, it was a very narrow so it made it difficult to somehow. It was actually Michelle that said, "Well, don't worry. Just keep. We can go. We can say whatever we want. We'll worry about it later." But it seemed as though that was, I guess, that made a difference. That to feel relaxed to really not stop, because I guess it was the sort of meta idea that knowing this and having this in mind made it that was sort of our meta task was to stay on
focus. Trefko was especially sensitive to that. He said, "Oh, I can't." He was almost inhibited.
Wrong so all three actually, which
I
is wrong.
Tell you, please don't worry. Tell the context if you wish, because if not, you will be completely inhibited.
My own interviewer. And observer also.
Claire said at one point it evokes experience, right?
What?
You said it evokes experience.
The context?
Yes.
Yes. This is the second one, yeah.
Right.
Yes, it helps to evoke experience.
Explanation, okay. So
but we see
okay.
that...
This is also experience. Yeah. Experience of...
Soon.
Description of experience.
Soon. we'll have a lot of exercise, especially on this subject.
Yeah, we encountered a difficulty between experience and goals, and this might relate to the remark I made before about, say, that it's certainly an idea of pretension. That if it seems that at least some of the time, intentionality and trying and striving can be part of the experience, and it isn't it isn't a satellite. Mm. At least that was how it was coming. You know, one of us wanted to was describing his or her experience that way.
And, my experience.
Yeah, okay. So Russ was describing his experience that way, and I was saying, "Well, you're into the goals." And he admitted, "Yeah, I guess I'm in the goals now." But it does seem, you know, also it does seem like the intensity, especially of the striving, was part of the experience, and the striving, the trying itself, was part of the experience. So maybe it could be it's difficult to know when you have veered into satellite motivation, goal, intention that's irrelevant, and when you're really sticking to the intentionality of the experience, which might be crucial to the exact quality of that experience. Mm-hmm. So do you have any guidelines for that? Or
In fact, have you an example? So could you give me your example?
The example from the group was, you want to do it since your experience?
I was writing something about what you had said before because I was trying to remember what it was because maybe we would talk about it later. That is background. And I was trying to listen to what you were saying. And so my experience was divided. And I was both trying to listen to what you were saying and trying to write it down. And so the question...
And there wasn't much else.
Right? Nothing else. And the question that Ron is raising is, well, is this trying experience or is this trying sort of the background? Mm-hmm. And the answer is it was pretty tough to discern that for me.
But I think a question would be... How were you trying? What did you do for trying? And this would have been refocused. I don't know what question you asked, but this type of question, yes, you are trying. So Russ is describing about this, to describe the goal. But how did you were you trying? It's the key question in this interview. How do you do for?
But it might not be part of the experience. So let's say you're trying to write something down by moving your fingers, but you might not be experiencing your fingers moving, even though that is the means by which you're striving to achieve the goal of getting the words down. It might be that your experience is the trying to get the words down, and the bodily movements that help you achieve that aren't part of the experience, right? Isn't that?
I'm not sure, because I have it's difficult for me to understand.
Oh,
you
I'm
sorry.
Used
it very, very
I'm
quickly.
Sorry.
But do you mean that... for trying, that Ross, for example, is not aware of the way he's trying.
Yeah.
But it's exactly the goal of this method, and we'll see that tomorrow, to help him to become aware of the subtle bodily and mental actions he does in order to listen.
So we can change his experience so that, but
it's not changing
the
experience. It's becoming aware of
some
operations he was not.
So for me, the important distinction would be for Russ is, as the interviewee, to focus on asking him to elaborate on what it felt like to be trying in that moment, rather than what is it you were trying to achieve.
Yes.
That would take us out of the experience.
Exactly. Thank you.